Hi listeners, thank you again for following us and returning for episode 2 of It All Began With Friends. I'm Jay.
I'm Bex.
Sam.
And this week we have a new face.
I'm Nick.
Lindsay is preparing for India, but we hope to Skype her in for episode 4. In the meantime, you can follow Lindsay's journey in India on our Instagram at It All Began With Friends. This week, we will be sharing the story of Dolly the dog, who was used repeatedly to provide puppies. We will ask questions, do we need better catering in schools for vegans? And we will discuss the documentary Dominion and share with you the interview I had with Dominion director Chris DeForce. Firstly, hello Nick.
Hello.
Hi Nick.
Hi. Hi Nick.
Welcome to It All Began With Friends.
Thank you.
As well as a vegan and one of my very closest friends, you are an assistant headmaster.
I just realised we're like a wedding party.
Oh, wow.
Should we just scrap this and start organising a wedding?
Sorry, continue.
That's true. Nick is our best man. Well, my best man. And Bex is actually Sam's maid of honour.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm sitting here in little bouquet.
But as well as that, Nick, you are an assistant headmaster at a primary school. You will soon be starting back with a new year. How many vegans are you likely to have, if there are any at all?
Well, I think the chances are we probably won't have any. I know there's one child in the school. We've got 360 children in the school, and there's one child in the school who is a vegan. The parents were very clear when he started the school that he was vegan and that he would follow a vegan diet. And the first question they asked, as you would expect, was what is on the school dinners menu that caters for vegans? And unfortunately, the answer was nothing. So we have three options for lunch every day. We have a meat option and two veg options. But even though we have the two vegetarian options, they're not necessarily vegan. So I'm just thinking off the top of my head, there's the fish and chips is classed as the vegetarian option, for example.
What?
I know.
Vegetarian.
And I know, very, very strange. they have these soya strips, which sound very nice, and children choose them over the meat option, but they've still got that, you know, they're like corn, some corn products have those proteins in that are derived from egg or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, in terms of how many children might be coming through as vegan, I doubt very much there'll be any, but hopefully if there are any, and hopefully there will be some, the parents will be very clear, because, you know, if you're not a vegan yourself, you know, a lot of the times you don't really understand what it is or how to cater for it.
Such a shame, isn't it? One out of all those children.
Mm. But what is really lovely is that obviously I'm very open with the children that I teach, and this year I was very open with my class about being vegan, and you know, every time I'd teach anything to do with animals or whatever, I'd get it in there somehow that I was vegan. And what was really, really lovely, I thought it really touched me, was at the end of the year when you get your gifts and you get your presents, and you know, you get a lot of wine and chocolates. This one child...
You get wine from the kids?
Yeah, yeah. Via the parents. This one child gave me a little package and said, I thought really carefully about this, and I asked my mum if I could get you this, and this is what we've got. So when I opened it, it turned out that it was vegan chocolate, and I just thought it was so lovely that she'd, you know, taken it on board and obviously said to her mum or whatever, you know, I want to get my teacher this present, and they'd gone out and found vegan chocolate, and I thought it was really sweet, because, you know, they didn't have to do that, and I'd obviously had some tiny little impact on that child.
Yeah.
And they'd thought about it.
What kind of response do you get from your kids when you talk to them about being vegan? Are they interested?
So I teach across the ages of 7 to 11, and I'm not sure how necessarily interested they are, but they're really open.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really lovely, because they don't have those preconceived ideas. They're not, you know, they're not told by the media that all vegans are preachers and, you know, all of that nonsense. So they're really open to it. And you know, sometimes they ask questions, and sometimes they don't. But everything's at face value, and it's really refreshing that, you know, there's no judgment whatsoever. It's just, oh, my teacher's a vegan and doesn't eat any meat products and follows a plant-based diet. So it's really, really refreshing.
I bet they don't have that immediate desire to defend themselves, which a lot of adults do.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And not. Those questions will actually be genuine questions rather than trying to catch you out, mm-hmm. which I think we all feel totally. We get from, mm-hmm. from people that aren't vegans.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. Nick, at what age do you think we should start teaching children about the cruelty of the meat and dairy industry and properly explain where their food actually comes from?
I think it has to start at a young age. You know, it doesn't have to be shocking. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Dominion, and obviously there's an element of the shock factor in that. It doesn't have to have that shock factor. It doesn't have to be something that's going to cause worry or upset or any anxiety, but it definitely should be something that's taught from a young age, that, you know, children need to know where that food is coming from and how that food is made and the process that it goes through to end up on your plate, which I think is almost deliberately not taught because of the society we live in. You know, I know it's not the same, but I've always wrestled with this, you know, being a gay man, I've always wrestled with this debate that comes up every so often about should we teach children about gay relationships and that kind of thing. And although it's very different, there are definitely parallels there in that we live in 2018, we live in this world where these things are normal and absolutely it should be taught and children should know that the truth. Science Week, we had duck eggs that were kept in an incubator and all the children cooed over them, and it was all, you know, it was such a lovely experience to see the eggs hatch and, you know, the ducklings come out, and then each class had, you know, an hour with the ducklings and we let them out of the cage, and at no point did anyone, adult or child, consider what then happened to those afterwards. They got sent back to the company and not one person questioned it. And obviously there's me Googling it and looking into the company, and, you know, they, on their website, they're very clever, on their website they say that most ducks will go to live on their farm. However, I can't remember how they word it, but in essence they say that that some will have to be used as food, or it says something like maybe used as food or other, oh, I can't remember the wording, but in a nutshell, they're giving themselves a little caveat to say that they can do whatever they want with these ducklings. And then when I did a bit more research, it turns out that schools up and down the country are doing this, and then they just get killed afterwards because they're of no use to anyone. Mm. And that was really hard for me. And some of my close friends at work, I shared that with, and I said, look, I don't think this is right. I think, you know, it's amazing in terms of science and in terms of the life cycle. It's great to see that these eggs hatch and you know, that the rate at which the ducklings developed, and, you know, they all had their own little personality, and it was lovely from that point of view. But what happens next? And that was the missing link for me. I was just thinking to myself, I want to know that these ducks are going to go onto a farm and live a happy life, and, you know, and I'm pretty sure that wasn't the case. And when it comes up, because it's something that this school does yearly, and I've only recently started working there, when it comes up again, I'm going to have to say, I don't think we should do it. I don't think it's responsible, ethical.
Yeah, good for you. I mean, we need more people standing up and doing things like that, really.
I just think, though, the problem, what will probably happen when you do that, which I mean, like, I'm so glad there are people out there who do stand up for that, but the response you'll probably get is, yeah, but that's your opinion, and, you know, these kids need to learn, and, you know, that's more important. And unfortunately, that's the response that you'll probably get, and I just find that, like, just so frustrating. You're like, it's not just an opinion, though, is it? Like,
just goes back to how we see ourselves as more important than any other life,
yeah.
And we're constantly trying to use them as a product of some kind, which actually brings me on to talking about the dog called Dolly. Nick, you are Dolly's owner. How did you come to find her and end up taking her home?
Well, we have we already had a miniature Dachshund called Dylan, who is now 8 years old. And just over a year ago, we decided that we wanted another dog. We wanted a little friend for Dylan, and We just wanted to expand our family. So we knew that we would only rescue. We knew that we wouldn't go down the breeder route. We knew that we wanted to give a dog a home. And we had looked into various options, Battersea Dogs Home. We'd looked at other rescue centres, centres that rescue from abroad, Cyprus, all those sorts of places where there are street dogs and dogs that are desperate for homes. And whilst I was trawling through the internet, I saw this dog posted on this website. The pictures just showed her, she hadn't been groomed. There was this story attached to the pictures where it said that she was a family dog and she was so loved and had been brought up in this family, and unfortunately she all of a sudden didn't get on with the other dog. So already the story didn't sound quite right. When we arrived at the house, she was in a plastic bed with a bit of newspaper that she was sitting on, and she just looked so sad. She just looked so sad. And, you know, we were asking the usual questions. We were asking, you know, does she like to play with any toys? No. Does she have a favourite blanket that we could take with us? No. Then when we looked at her, we noticed that her teats were just so big, like dragging on the floor. And so my husband said to the owner, oh, how many litters has she had? And at the same time, the wife said one and the husband said two at exactly the same time. And I wish you could see what she looks like, because it's clear that she has had many, many more. And then obviously when we took her home, we took her to the vet, and the vet confirmed that she had had probably 5 or 6 litters by the age of 4. So they can have 2 seasons a year. So the chances are she'd been mated every season. So when we got her home, we then discovered more about her. It turns out that she'd only ever been kept outside. So she wouldn't come in the front door, no matter how much coaxing we did, treats, you know, she just would not come in the house because it was so alien to her. So she'd been kept outside exclusively. She was scared of everyone and everything. She hadn't been socialised with other dogs. So she was okay with Dylan. I think Dylan's really placid and really laid back. She was okay with him, but still now, a year on, when we take her out for a walk, she will bark at every dog that she comes into contact with. If she takes a dislike to a human, she'll bark non-stop, and it's really hard to get her out of that. So we've had dog trainers in. We've actually got one coming on Thursday to come and have a look at her and help us with her, because she is hard work. But when you think about the life that she's had, it's kind of to be expected. And, you know, she is just the most adorable little thing, the way she looks at you. You know, I wouldn't change her for the world, but we've got to crack this behaviour.
What kind of dog is she?
She's a miniature Dachshund as well. Yes. She's a wire haired, yeah.
Sam and I have actually met Dolly, and we met her when you got her. Mm. And to see the change in her from day one is remarkable. She's like a totally different dog. What you and Simon have done is incredible. It's very inspiring. I wish I had a big enough house and with a garden to have a dog as well. But we don't, so it would never be fair to do that. But what you've done is great. Obviously, what Dolly has gone through is awful. But do you think that people are more likely to acknowledge that it is wrong in regards to dogs experiencing pain in this way, in comparison to cows, for instance, who are used to breed so that we can have their baby's milk? Is there any difference in the trauma experienced?
I don't think there's any difference whatsoever. The difference is that people view cats and dogs as pets that they form that bond with and that relationship with, and have them living under their roof. And I just don't think many people view other animals in that way. And I think it's hard to view them in that way when you can't bring a cow into your house and let it live there. But that doesn't mean to say that it's got any less emotions or feelings than a cat or a dog.
But interestingly, though, I've had people say to me, but you have dogs at home, so you're keeping an animal for your own entertainment. And I find that a very difficult point to argue, because my argument would be, but I am giving that animal a, in my eyes, a wonderful life, and giving it love and care and all the things that we do with our pets, and, you know, embrace its personality and look after it. And they just come back with this argument that, yes, but that's not vegan, because you're keeping an animal for your own entertainment. If your argument is that no animal is on this earth for us, how can we have pets? And I find that a very difficult thing to think about. I don't know if you guys have had anything similar to that.
But I suppose because dogs, for example, as you're saying, because they are in this world of domesticity now, what would the alternative be if you didn't own it and you didn't care for it and it was like there for your entertainment, which isn't, you know,
necessarily true.
But what is the alternative if they are, if you aren't caring for them? And it's the same with cats, I suppose. They're more independent, but if you don't have them in your home, then what happens to them?
I guess it goes back to what Nick and Simon have done in the fact that they've saved a dog from a life is cruel. And if we're going to have animals as pets, like dogs and cats, we should go down the route of saving animals that already exist rather than breeding more. Would you agree, Nick?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't know if you've seen in the news that there is a law that they're considering passing, which is that you cannot buy pets from pet shops anymore in terms of cats and dogs. So you would have to go to a licensed breeder, or you would have to adopt one or rescue one, which I think is absolutely a step in the right direction, because, you know, there are so many animals, pets, dogs, cats, that are not in a good situation or are sitting in Battersea Dogs and Cats Home waiting for someone to take them home. And it's all too easy to just go to a pet shop. I remember way back, Dylan must have only been one or two, and we went to Harrods, and they've got the most amazing pets place in Harrods. And there was this sausage dog sitting behind this glass screen. And at the time, obviously, I didn't know what I know now. And I remember just looking at it and thinking, oh, I just want to take you home. But now, having done the research, the dogs that you find in pet shops are often as a result of puppy farming. Mm-hmm. They've often got really terrible illnesses because of interbreeding and all those sorts of things. And as I said, there are so many animals that are desperate to have a nice life that we should really be adopting and rescuing over breeding.
Yeah. After watching Dominion, which obviously we're going to talk about in a moment, I reacted to the dogs the most. And I'm not saying I was angry with myself for that, because obviously it's good to feel that towards dogs, but I had been on an animal sanctuary farm volunteering there, where I hugged turkeys, which I had never hugged a turkey in my life. So I was so disconnected with turkeys, you just wouldn't think that they were so loving.
I've never hugged a turkey before.
Exactly. But this turkey, she was actually called Matilda. She still is called Matilda. She's still alive. And she would just come, like, right up to me and go, like, I'd hold my arms out and she would just come right into my chest. And you can hear her heart beating, and she was so warm. And until you moved, she wouldn't go anywhere. Oh, she was so content in just being there cuddling you. Amazing. And the colours as well. She's so beautiful. Just gave me a whole different vision of turkeys. So, like, I really reacted to that at Christmas time when my mum and nan wanted to buy a turkey and wanted me to lift this frozen turkey up onto a counter, and I was like, I can't, I'm really sorry. And I went out and I was like, why have I just apologized? Like, you should be sorry. And I was overwhelmed with how many people were buying turkeys for this tradition, and I had only a week ago spent this time with a real turkey, which most people have never cuddled a turkey. And yeah, I had this whole thing with my mum, and my mum was like, I don't understand. And she, like, apologized to me. She was like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, I don't know what to say to you, Mum, because I just feel like I have seen and experienced something that I just can't put into words. And all I'm saying to you is all I can see around me is death.
Mm.
It's really sad. There is also other animals in the documentary that I had obviously spent time with on the sanctuary. The cows, for instance, that licked my hair and my face like a dog would. As soon as you see it, I cuddled the sheep, and they would, like, there was this one particular sheep that whenever I would come to them would just run over to me. And when I'd spend loads of time with him, and then when I'd have to leave, he would just follow me all the way up the fence as if to say, don't go. And you just see these similarities with dogs in all the different animals on the farm. So I was slightly annoyed with myself that when it came to the dogs, I uncontrollably wept when I watched what happens to them in the documentary Dominion. And I was so sad, I couldn't even express where the emotion was coming from. But I couldn't work out why I wasn't having that same reaction for all the animals. And it's obviously because we're just so much more connected with dogs, because we get to see them every day.
Mm.
And I just think that if more people spent more time with other animals, they would feel very differently.
Mm. I suppose it's hard, isn't it? Because, yes, in an ideal world, we would spend more time with those animals, but you wouldn't want to be going to a zoo. You can't necessarily see them in their natural habitat. So you rely on places like the sanctuary to go and connect with those animals and spend time with those animals. You just don't have the opportunity to do that as much, you know, as you can with dogs and cats.
I completely agree that, yes, being around these animals and seeing them alive and happy is a massive aid in connecting with them and understanding that they are beings that have their own lives and blah blah, but it shouldn't take that. We shouldn't have to experience it for ourselves to understand that a living creature is a living creature, and that is that.
Yeah.
Like, it obviously, it, you know, we can talk all we want about what it should be and what it shouldn't be, but I just think it's such a shame that people can't just open their eyes and, you know, just,
I really suggest that any listeners out there who have never been to a sanctuary farm before, I really recommend visiting one. Mm. Just to reconnect, even if it's just for one day, just go and spend some time with some animals that were meant to be slaughtered and they're still alive. And just knowing that resonates something inside you that you can't explain to anybody else. And I really recommend that. There's a sanctuary called The Farm Animal Sanctuary. They're based in Evesham. That's the one that I spent time on. And I would really recommend looking them up. You can find them on Facebook, on Twitter. But they're not the only one. There's farm animal sanctuaries all over the country, all over the world. Look them up, find your nearest one, and just go there for just one day even.
You know what I found quite funny and really moving, actually, was the fact that, you know, as humans, we all have our story to tell, but these animals have a story as well. And it was, you know, we were really lucky that we were shown around the sanctuary by Jan, the owner. And, you know, we'd stop at a pig and then she'd say, oh, this is whoever. And she was actually supposed to be slaughtered, but when she got to the slaughterhouse, they'd filled in her paperwork incorrectly. So she got sent back, and then fortunately we managed to intercept her. And, you know, they've all got these stories. This pig was literally about to be killed, but because of human error, managed to get sent back to the farm. And that, you know, that they've all got their little story, and it's really heartwarming.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was Frida, the pig, and I think she has a friend called Colin. They're amazing.
Colin is very cute.
Yeah, they have quite a few pigs, actually, and they all have, like you said, their own story. There's also Freedom, the sheep. They found her disabled, and now she's in, like, she's been through recovery, and she runs around with all the other sheep and gets to live a happy life. And I reckon every animal on every sanctuary has a story. Go and find out their stories.
You just wish they could talk.
Yeah, you really do.
So do you think it's necessary to hear these stories in order for humans to be able to relate to them? So if we think of them as having, as being like humans, as having human stories, is that going to make it easier for humans to then relate to animals and to make that connection with animals that aren't dogs and cats?
Probably. Because we all want something that we can relate to. Don't we? Like that is how we do most of our connection. You know, when you make friends with people, you connect most with people who have maybe been through similar things to you, or, you know, have similar outlooks to you, or, you know, the people you connect with are the people who you have the most in common with.
It's empathy, isn't it, as well? You gain a strong connection. If you can empathise with someone or something, you definitely get a connection with them.
Mm. And I think as a human race, we think highly of ourselves as well. And we think that we are the race that really matters. Obviously, not everyone thinks that, but I think a lot of us do. So I think if you think of other living beings in relation to us, then, you know, that's...
I think you're right. And it's important that it's, for the human species, that it's what they have in common with us rather than what we have in common with them.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, the zoo as well. You know, we are disconnected with so many animals. So, so many. And this actually brings us to our last and main subject on Dominion, the documentary. For those of you who haven't seen Dominion or haven't heard of it and don't know what it's about, Dominion uses drones, hidden and handheld cameras to expose the dark underbelly of modern animal agriculture. It questions the morality and validity of humankind's dominion over the animal kingdom. While mainly focusing on animals used for food, it also explores other ways animals are exploited and abused by humans, including clothing, entertainment, and research. You can watch Dominion by going to their website, dominionmovement.com. But before we talk about it, let's have a listen to some of the interview I had with Dominion director Chris Delforce. Welcome to It All Began With Friends. Could you firstly talk to us and our listeners about how you became a vegan, and was there any eye-opening moment for you?
Well, I went vegetarian when I was 10 or 11, just because it kind of hit me one night that maybe animals didn't want to be eaten. There wasn't any kind of particular thing that I saw or read or anything that led me to that conclusion. It just kind of hit me out of nowhere, and it was a long time before I started looking into the philosophy, the ethics behind vegetarianism and veganism. I was still, it'll be 9 years before I went vegan, because I didn't know anything about the cruelty in the egg or the dairy industries. And thankfully I made friends with some vegans in a local animal liberation organization who taught me about, you know, how male chicks and male calves are not useful to those industries, so they're killed at a very young age as waste products, basically, which kind of blew my mind. And I realized that I'd been not living in alignment with my values and my ethics for such a long time. I knew I had to go vegan straight away, so that must have been when I was about 19, I think, which is now eight years ago.
Wow.
and around that same time, those friends started taking me along to do rescues at factory farms, which again was such an eye-opening experience. There was just so much I didn't know about, and it really got me thinking I had to learn as much as I could and try and understand these industries.
Yeah.
And show the world what was happening, because I knew that most people would not be okay with what's going on, with what they're paying for unknowingly.
Yeah. It's amazing that you were so young when you first realised. I do wish that I was a lot younger when I realised, but I think we're so brainwashed, aren't we, by society.
Yeah, I think every vegan wishes that.
Yeah.
I wish I'd gone vegan at age 3.
How did you come to be involved in making Dominion? And for anyone who hasn't heard of it, Could you just tell us a little bit about the journey of the piece?
Yeah, I think, so when I started going to farms and to slaughterhouses, we were mostly going to piggeries. And that was because we got footage from one piggery and we released it publicly, and there was a lot of public outcry about it. People were quite upset about the footage, and the pig industry basically responded by saying it was a one-off rogue operator who didn't represent the industry. So we thought we'd set out to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
So we were going to pig farm after pig farm, basically just to prove that all of this was standard practice. And we were getting so much material, so much footage, it became apparent we needed to do something bigger with it. And that's where I thought of doing my first documentary, which was called Lucent, which we released in late 2014. So that mostly focused on pig farming. And it was kind of inevitable after that that I'd have to do a new project focusing on how other animals are used and abused.
Yeah.
Not just for food, but for other other things as well, like clothing and scientific research and entertainment. So it was kind of the inevitable next step, trying to create a really comprehensive picture of all the different ways that animals are used and exploited for commercial gain.
That was the hardest hitting thing for me when I watched Dominion was I'd obviously watched so many. There's loads now of things to watch. It's very hard to ignore. But for me with Dominion, I expected to see all the farm animals, and it was quite shocking to see all the others. And obviously we know what's happening, but how many there are, and it just goes on and on and on, and you just think, what have we done? Like, what are we doing, you know?
And it's not even completely comprehensive. We had to miss out a few animals that we would have loved to cover.
Yeah.
Just because it's already 2 hours long. It's very difficult to get people to sit down and watch a two-hour film. And there was a lot of pressure to even cut it down to an hour and a half. I just couldn't do that. So, unfortunately, there are quite a few species whose stories we couldn't tell.
Yeah. Actually, at this screening we went to in Leicester Square, I went with a few friends, and we normally can't stop talking after any event that we go to, but we were all just silent. I don't think we even looked at each other. What would you say to convince people who are put off going to Dominion because of not wanting to see the suffering of animals?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. We get maybe 5% of people walking out at most screenings.
Yeah.
I think that even if they walk out after 10 minutes, it's still probably planted such a powerful seed for them. They're never going to be able to get it out of their minds. For most people, this is the first time they've ever seen anything like this. The first time they've ever been exposed to this kind of thing. So they don't necessarily need to watch the whole film. They might just need to watch those 10 minutes and their whole worldview will have been shattered.
It seems that a lot of people I speak to they find it easier acknowledging the cruelty within the meat industry, but they find it harder to acknowledge the cruelty within the dairy industry.
Dairy has long managed to escape the stigma that the meat industry has had.
Yeah.
But I think that's definitely changing. People are becoming aware that it's just as cruel, if not more cruel, because of the way that the mother cows are exploited for years, whereas in the meat industry, it tends to be much shorter. And the fact that their babies are taken away at such a young age in the dairy industry also, and cows being such maternal animals, have got such strong bonds with their young. It's so traumatic for them to have their young taken away at such a young age over and over again. It really breaks these animals.
Yeah. On Saturday at the Animal Rights March, we had over 10,000 people marching. It was incredible and the atmosphere was warm, and we felt supported by each other and the public.
However, when we passed a certain well-known fast food restaurant, the atmosphere changed, as there were roughly 8 members of the police force guarding the building and the people inside.
Does it still shock you how protected the meat industry is, and do you think they will ever be on our side?
I think they're really starting to get scared now. They're putting in a lot of resources to to keep up this secrecy that they're so dependent on.
Yeah.
They're getting quite desperate, I think, a lot of the time. And it's, I've always said it's going to get worse before it gets better. We're going to see police and government cracking down on activists more and more,
yeah.
criminalizing all sorts of protests. It's already happening, especially in the United States and here in Australia, more and more so. I think there's a growing number of examples of companies recognizing that if they want to remain profitable in the years to come, they need to capitalize on this growing movement rather than trying to attack it.
Yeah. One of the questions I get a lot is, are we as bad in the UK as everywhere else? And recently I've just been saying, watch Dominion.
I think every country seems to think that. I mean, the reason we made Dominion is because everyone here in Australia always said, no, that doesn't happen here, things are better here. So we made Dominion to dispel that myth, and in doing so we've realised that, yeah, every country says that. If the footage isn't from their own country, they have a hard time believing that it's relevant to them.
Yeah.
So we've tried as best we can, even though Dominion's mainly filmed in Australia, we've tried to make it as globally relevant as possible and focus on how these animals don't need to die, they don't need to be bred for this purpose, regardless of how well or how poorly they're treated. But I think people will still always come up with these excuses, so it's great that there's a lot of local footage coming out. So in the UK there's plenty of pretty much the exact same kind of footage coming out from farms and slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
And of course there's Land of Hope and Glory, the film by Earthling Ed and, and Luna, which is all UK footage and basically shows the exact same thing. So
yeah.
I think it's really powerful that we do have these local resources coming out in each country for when people try and use that excuse.
Yeah. I met Earthling Ed on Saturday, actually, at the march. And, really nice guy.
Yeah, he's so nice.
Yeah. how can we help promote Dominion further? Is there any news on future platforms for people to access Dominion, and any news on Netflix?
I think Netflix is probably quite unlikely. I think it's just going to be too graphic. We're still trying. Probably won't have a definite answer for another month or two.
Yeah.
But I think chances are we'll be putting it up on YouTube for free.
Right.
We never wanted to charge for it, really. We just want to make sure it's by as many people as possible.
Yeah. There are times when I feel like I'm not doing enough. Do you have any recommendations to any new activists wanting to do more?
I think we'll always feel that way. We'll never feel like we're doing enough. But yeah, there are a lot of amazing groups out there. Groups like the Save Movement, who do vigils outside slaughterhouses to connect with these animals, you know, when they're on the trucks on the way into the slaughterhouse. So that's a really powerful thing everyone can get involved with. There's Anonymous for the Voiceless, who show footage in the streets, basically to the people who need to see it, the consumers. And there's a lot of larger organisations like Animal Equality and PETA, who conduct investigations and do all sorts of amazing things. So, there's a lot of groups out there, and I'd firstly just suggest that anyone who wants to get involved see who is active in your local area and go along. I mean, everyone's different. Some forms of activism work differently for some people than for others. I think generally you just need to find what you're good at and what you're passionate about, and find a way to use that for your activism.
That's great advice, thank you. It's emotionally draining just fighting with friends and family, but at the height of your activism it must get tough. How do you look after yourself? Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
I don't know. I work with a lot of great people, so it's great that I'm never alone in this. There's always people who are going through the exact same thing who I can talk to about it.
Yeah.
think it's, yeah, it's really important to acknowledge that burnout can happen very easily. It's definitely important to look after ourselves and to take time off, not try and take on the burden too personally and too consistently, be able to step back from it from time to time.
Yeah, I definitely felt it at the march, because being surrounded by so many people that believe the same as you, you felt really like empowered and strong. And as soon as it was over and you were back at work or doing your day-to-day things, surrounded by people eating meat in front of you and not even thinking about it, you're then that quiet vegan again that keeps any of those thoughts to yourself. And it's quite hard, it feels quite lonely, especially after being with 10,000 people. It's quite difficult to look after yourself, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, I think it's best to seek out that kind of community feeling as often as we can.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got one last question. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I know some of the questions aren't easy to answer, but thank you. And thank you for everything you've done with Dominion and with everything else. And we'll obviously keep following you and spreading the awareness.
Thank you.
But our last question is, do you envision a future where the world is vegan?
I envision a future where commercial animal exploitation and abuse no longer exists. I think that there'll always be people who want to harm and kill and eat animals, just as there are always people who want to kill other people or steal or do any number of things that society considers wrong. But I think we can get to a point where society does consider it wrong to exploit and kill animals. It's no longer done legally for profit. I think that is a very realistic possibility. Mm-hmm. And that's what I fight for.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you very much. You're very inspiring. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Everything he says just sounds so sincere.
There's something about hearing it from him. You know,
100%.
The fact that he was the...
He's been there. He's bloody been to all those slaughterhouses. Yeah. God.
I said to my friend yesterday, actually, that listening to Chris speak... It's going to sound weird, but I said I feel almost like a fraud, because I feel like how can I claim to be an activist when I haven't done what he has done or what Earthling Ed has done or James Aspie, you know? And you just think, how do you get to that level? But my friend made a really good point, and I think Earthling Ed said this on Saturday at the march, that we all have our own creative outlets to make change, and we can't compare ourselves to other activists. We all have our own way of doing things, and we also have to look after ourselves, so we can only do what we feel we are capable of doing.
Well, he said that in the interview, didn't he? He said, you know, you have to find the way activism works for you and go with that. Like, not everyone can do everything.
Yeah,
and you're in a completely different space and you know, a totally different time on your journey than him. But I really like what you said about a different creative outlet, because you know, I know that you've got things in the pipeline to do with theatre and you're writing things that will have a really strong line through it, which with that vegan, you know, element, and that kind of passion will come through that way, which is something that other people can't do because they don't have the skills, they don't have the resources. And you're in year one of your journey, year two now of your journey, whereas these other people that we're talking about, you know, he went vegan when he was, you know,
19.
And
acknowledged it
vegetarian
from
the age of 9, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, this, he's in a completely different
place. We can't compare
place.
Each other. It's not a competition either. No. It's like we're all at one big community, really.
And also, I think we've got to remember, even the smallest impact will have ripple effect on other people. And, you know, you might think that what you're doing right now isn't big, but I think when you look at the bigger picture, even the smallest, you know, if I can have a tiny influence over the children that I teach, then I know that somewhere along the line, you know, even if it's just one child who one day says, I'd like to go vegan, or I'd like to look into something in a bit more detail, I know I've had even just the smallest impact.
Yeah, definitely. What I found most hard-hitting about the documentary was how many different breeds of species we exploit and kill, as we mentioned earlier. I knew I was going to view the experiences from farm animals, but I wasn't prepared for all the footage on dogs, horses, rabbits, foxes, dolphins. The list just went on, and obviously, as Chris says, they couldn't even show us all the species that there are that we exploit. How did that make you guys feel?
Well, I have just remembered one merman from the documentary. There's a bit, I think it's a gurt, and its mother is taken away, and it's just left wondering where the hell she is, and they keep going back to it, and I think it ends on that. And it's just come back to me and it's just devastating. It's just, yeah, really sad. But ultimately, I think it's hard to remember exactly how I felt, because it was the immersion, the feeling was very of that merman. But I do remember it being completely relentless. And even though I had prepared myself for something really, really hard hitting, nothing can prepare you. However, it's really, really a necessary watch. And it's not about us, it's about them. So I think you just need to put yourself through it. And yeah, I think it's really important to watch. Very emotional.
Something that really resonates with me that you've just said was that those feelings and that emotion you had in the moment, because I definitely had, real anger, I had real upset while I was watching it. But then I think my emotions kind of changed over time, because I had that experience whilst I was watching it, and I suppose in the hours or even days afterwards. And then now, having seen it a couple of months ago and having done a bit more research around it, it's a bit of a different emotion. I'm much more angry, I think, than I was when I was watching it at the time. I suppose I was more shocked at the time. Now I'm less shocked, and I can really believe that those things are all happening, which I suppose, even though I've been vegan for a year, there was still almost that disbelief that things were happening. And now I'm really angry, and what I think has annoyed me the most is that since watching it and doing research on it, if you Google Dominion Movement or whatever, nobody's got anything positive to say other than vegan news outlets. So for example, when I Googled it, the first hit was a news article about farmers who are up in arms about it, because they're saying it's not an accurate representation of farming in Australia, and how they, you know, they think that the director has duped people into believing that that's what it's like. Now, in my opinion, the film is brilliant, because there's no, it's all factual. There's no, you know, sensationalizing anything. There's no making things sound worse than they are. You are watching real footage. There is nobody that can deny that those practices are occurring right now, because you are watching real fly on the wall footage. Now, fair enough, people might argue that it's not common practice, but the fact that you've got footage from Australia, England, other countries around the world showing the same practices means that it is happening, and it is happening a lot. I think that's unequivocal. I don't think anybody can argue with that. And I think that's why it's such an amazing film, because it is so powerful, but it's all real.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that turned me vegan was watching a series of, like, you know, those documentaries on Netflix, Cowspiracy, and I think, again, after those, I Googled them, and I saw that there were a lot of things in there that could be contested, and a lot of research that was done that was perhaps slightly biased. But Dominion doesn't do that. There's nothing in there that you can argue with. It's all real, it's all true, and I think that's why it's so powerful, and that's why I think it's so important that everybody sees it.
Mm. Yeah, that actually brings me on to my next thing. As Chris said, even if people only watch the first 10 minutes, it would change their view on the world. What do you guys think about sharing the film with non-vegans? Would you be willing to ask your family members to watch it?
If I haven't already tell my mum and my sister to watch Dominion. They are vegetarians, and I think that would definitely push them to become vegan. And I think that it's very, very important for those that still eat meat and have dairy products, eggs, to watch as well. But it's just actually getting them to actually watch, knowing what it's about, and just kind of getting through the first 10 minutes. I think that would be a struggle, because a lot of people would just not want to know. They just, like, they care. They claim to care about animals. And like, unless you're evil or a sociopath, of course you care about animals. But I think there's still that disconnection, isn't there? And it's just about getting them to watch it in the first place.
I think it's a really great thing too. I think it might have the biggest impact on vegetarians, because they've already made the step to cut meat out of their lives. And for, you know, if they already have that compassion in them, then for a lot of the time it's just the case that they don't understand what is going on in the dairy industry. Like with my family, like, I'm in the process of educating them on what more is going on outside the meat industry. I think I know if my family watched Dominion, they would probably almost immediately make steps to cross into the vegan world. So I think it would have a massive impact on vegetarians. I think on meat eaters, again, it goes back to the thing that people are so defensive. If they don't want to hear it, they won't. If they're happy to open their eyes and let these things in, then maybe they'll be able to sit through it. But I don't know.
So obviously we all have to come to making that choice ourselves. It has to come from somewhere inside ourselves. We can't ever put pressure on someone to make that choice, you know. I just wonder how we can go about finding ways to open people's eyes other than documentaries or books where people have to pick those things up themselves, you know.
I think that is the hardest thing, isn't it? Because the minute you engage in a conversation with somebody, they're always defensive. And it's, you know, they're about to be preachy. Bex, I completely agree with what you're saying about, for a vegetarian, it's a natural progression. But if I think about where I came from, I was the biggest meat eater. I was that meat eater where I had to have meat at every meal, otherwise it wasn't a proper meal. And I turned vegan literally overnight. Because of how it made me feel, it was literally a switch. I did not go back. And the only time I've eaten meat since is accidentally in a restaurant where I've been served something that had some kind of meat product in. Which, by the way, I went absolutely mad about. Absolutely mad about. But so for me, it was actually most impactful going from a meat eater to then being vegan. And there was no kind of... there was no transition through being vegetarian or pescatarian or anything. It was just from one to the other.
What opened your eyes?
So I had actually, I'd gone on some teacher training in San Diego. It was an absolutely amazing experience. And one of the other people that I was with was a vegan and didn't make a big song and dance about it at all. I just noticed that he wasn't eating meat, and the conversation opened and I started the conversation, and he was not preachy at all. He talked about being vegan. He talked about what he ate, what he couldn't eat. It was particularly hard because we were on this university campus and the cafeteria just did not really have anything for vegans. So he was eating a lot of salad. There was nothing like tofu or any kind of protein source. And it just got me thinking. It just got me thinking, and obviously I'd had lots of conversations with you, Jay, about veganism, and I knew a couple of other people that were vegan. And when I got home, my husband was vegetarian and has been vegetarian ever since we've been together. But when I got home, I joked with him and I said, I think I could be vegan. I'm going to try it for a month. And it was a bit of a joke. Actually,
he said he'd give you £100.
And he said he'd give me £100, which, by the way, I still haven't got. So, Simon, if you're listening, I'm ready for my money. It was a bit of a joke. And then that was it. I started and I thought, right, I'm going to give it a go. And on the first day, I sat down in front of Netflix and I watched Cowspiracy, and then I watched the next one, and then I watched the next one, and the next one. Four documentaries in, and that was it. I thought to myself, I can never eat meat again. There is no way that I can knowingly eat meat or any animal product again. So that was kind of how I came to be vegan, and I think that's why it's interesting. Yes, of course, it makes logical sense for a vegetarian to then transition into veganism. It's not really that hard, but actually, as a staunch meat eater, being enlightened in that way did exactly the same thing for me.
Yeah.
But I had to find it myself.
Yeah.
And that's the difficult part. It took me being interested in it, talking to people, finding out about it, to make the change. And to be honest, if someone had come to me and said, you should be vegan, listen to this, and then started spouting off stuff, I probably wouldn't have been interested.
Yeah.
It probably would have turned me off.
What I'm taking from this is that we should just all go round to a lot of people and bet them money.
So if anybody's listening who is a multimillionaire and is able to give us some money that we can bribe
fund
people
our
with.
Pets.
Yeah. Yeah, well, money's very powerful, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, is that not why we are in this predicament?
Well, exactly.
Because animals are used for money, really. That's what it all comes down to, isn't it? Is
the
making
animal industry
money.
Is worth.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much it's worth. I've talked about it somewhere.
I think that also makes me think about how hard it is as an activist to constantly be trying to be patient with people and to understand that everyone has their own journey, which I think we all do quite well, but it is hard at times and it takes a lot of strain on our mental well-being, I think, especially when you're so passionate about fighting for animals. When I asked Chris about how he looks after himself, it was obviously a difficult question, being a very personal question. What would be your response to that same question? How do you look after yourself?
I wasn't expecting you to turn that around on us.
We had the same long pause that Chris had.
Yeah.
I think similarly to what he said, you surround yourself, well, obviously you can't always surround yourself, but you seek out those communities that are supportive and, you know, the friends who are, you know, feel the same as you. And for me, I like to go to the events where, you know, it's for people who have the same mindset, you know, like the marches and like VegFest and conferences and stuff like that. I like to go to those things to feel like you're not alone and to feel like, and you know, and also to learn how to deal with the backlash and the comments that get thrown your way. And the more people you speak to and the more you surround yourself with those people, the more you can handle those conversations and those arguments when people get defensive and things like that. But yeah, I think it's about other people for me.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be so hard if my husband wasn't vegan. I think it would be so hard. And I know Jay and Sam, you've got each other, and I just think you know, even family, we'll you know, go for dinner at my husband's parents' house, and just as a joke, his mum will say, oh, when are you going to give up this vegan thing? And my response is the same every time, never. And even that is just a, you know, that's a tricky one, because she is saying it in jest, but as we know, all jokes are based on truth somewhere down the line, aren't they?
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right. It is about surrounding yourself with like-minded people, people that you can just rely on to, you know, they're thinking the same way as you, and you know they're going through the same thing as you.
I think it's also important to, when you can, like we said earlier, try and spend time with animals, because aren't they who we're fighting for? And I think for me, when I haven't seen animals for a while, I start to feel almost a little bit disconnected again. And I'm like, oh, everything here I'm fighting for, I know what I'm fighting for is right. But every time I see an animal, it becomes stronger. So I think spending time with animals is like really a massive key to the mental health, because you remember why you're doing it, and it's not for us, it's for them. And I remember speaking to Janet at the Farm Animal Sanctuary, and I said to her, how do you deal with the emotional journey of this that you're on? You've been on for your life, pretty much. And she said to me, I'm lucky. I get to spend time with all the animals. Mm. I never forget, you know. Yeah. And I remember her sending me this lovely message at Christmas saying, have a lovely Christmas. I'm not celebrating Christmas this year. I'm not spending it with anybody. I just want to be with the animals. And I thought, wow, like, that says it all, really, doesn't it? And it actually, that's what made my Christmas really hard, because I thought, I'm just surrounded by this tradition that we have, and I'd rather be with Janet on the farm.
I'd rather be with Janet.
There's definitely something in what you've said about being with animals, and I don't know if you know that there's quite a big kind of movement towards using animals in therapy. It's an animal charity, I can't remember off the top of my head, but they take dogs into schools, and it's just amazing the interactions that children have with dogs, and they're used in a kind of therapy way. So what you're saying is absolutely right. It's spending time with animals can really do great things for your well-being.
You reminded me, actually, if anyone's seen it on Netflix, there's the series 13 Reasons Why. It's a very heavy emotional thing to watch, let alone be a part of. So I think the actors, from what I've read, they all actually did have dogs come in, and they would sit and spend time with them in between takes.
Wow.
Yeah, so that they could just feel the warmth and the love that a dog can give you, an animal can give you. And it was really good therapy for them, because obviously without that, their mental well-being was just really affected by performing those roles.
This is slightly off topic, but there's there's something that I've always wanted to do since going vegan, and I've still not plopped up the courage to do it, which is go to one of the vigils that the Save Movement does, or, you know, there are other companies that do them as well. You know, I follow them all on Instagram and I see it all the time. It's something that I know that I really, really want to do, and I know it will be good for me in the long run, but it's like dominioned at times by 1,000, because you're there, and it's something that I've wanted to do for a long time. I just don't know yet if I can do it, but maybe we should go and do it.
So what exactly is a vigil? Yeah. Sorry,
guys.
I just need to
So you go to a slaughterhouse, and you stand outside as the trucks come in with the animals, and you stop the trucks, and you take lots of footage of the animals inside the trucks, and like just stop them there for as long as possible. And the main thing is to get footage and get it out there, get it seen. But there's so much, like, follow the Save Movement on Instagram, because you'll see all the stuff that they do. It's mainly pigs, but they do a lot with like cows and chickens and stuff as well. But it's just mainly to get footage out there, you know, see the animals' eyes and show the conditions inside the trucks, and, you know, all this stuff there, the last few minutes or hours before the inevitable, wow, can't speak. But yeah, it's something that I've always wanted to do.
I'm with you on that. It's something I've been debating for a while now, and I've spoken to a lot of friends, I've spoken to you, Nick, I've spoken to Sam, and it's been something that I've said I've wanted to do, but I don't know that I'm strong enough.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't know if it's because of the march on Saturday, but I feel very strong-minded, and I do really want to go with you.
Maybe we should do it.
It's something I just feel like I'm never going to understand fully. It's kind of like watching anything on a film. Someone said to me yesterday, actually, but you don't need to go to war to know what war is like. And I said, yes, I hear you, definitely.
You're never going to feel the things
but
of war unless you were in war.
How can I fight for something that I haven't seen with my own eyes? You can, obviously, but I think you are stronger when you've seen that.
Yeah.
You know,
you have that fire as well. I think you need to maintain that fire, and in order to do that, you need to kind of be in that war zone.
Mm. Yeah,
I think.
So let's look into
it.
That.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't do it by myself.
Yeah, I'll go with you. Well, I think that's all we've got time for today, unfortunately. I mean, that's quite a long time, really. But
I really feel like we could just talk all day.
Yeah, we could. But I'm sure we'll all be back again soon. But thank you, listeners, for joining us again for our second episode.
If you would like to send us any questions or topics to talk about, or you just want to say hi, please email us on itallbeganwithfriends@hotmail.com. We will be dedicating our next episode to the Animal Rights March in London that I attended last Saturday, where we will talk about the atmosphere, the powerful moments, and of course meeting Earthling Ed. So please look out for that, and we look forward to speaking to you soon. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Take care. Bye. Bye. Bye.